So who am I thinking about right now? She is on the cover of this month's Vogue magazine. She signed up for the next Star Wars film, and People magazine crowned her the most beautiful woman in the world this year. And yet, a year ago, we barely knew the name Lupita Nyong'o. That was until her role as Patsy in the award-winning film 12 Years a Slave earned her an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, and fans who somehow escaped her riveting performance were captured by her heartfelt acceptance speech.
I want to thank my family for your training and the Yale School of Drama as well for your training. When I look down at this golden statue, may it remind me and every little child that no matter where you're from, your dreams are valid.
You might have wondered about the people she was talking about. One very important person thanked in that speech was Professor Peter Anyang Nyong'o. He might be known most popularly as Lupita's dad, but in his own right, he is a political science professor and a senator in his home country of Kenya. He happened to be in Washington, D.C. for the Smithsonian's Folklife Festival, which features Kenya this year. So what a great opportunity to meet with him and hear what his year has been like. Senator, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
When you heard your daughter thank you and the family for her training, first, what went through your mind, and what was she talking about?
Well, my wife and I were there. We are sitting a little bit far from her and our little boy, Junior. They were together.
Yes, we saw Junior in the famous selfie with Ellen DeGeneres, the host of the Academy Awards. He made quite a striking figure there as well. Yes.
Yeah, but we were as moved as everybody. I mean, I couldn't believe that that was Lupita talking. We call her Amondi. But, of course, most well-known name is Lupita. So, you know, as a parent, you get kind of taken aback how wise the little ones have become. And we almost shed tears when we had those words of wisdom. And really, it was quite a wonderful evening.
Well, it capped off on quite a remarkable year for her. I mean, she had been recognized by other professional groups as well for, as you mentioned, not just for her performance, but also for her common sense and for her inspiring words. And you said, as a parent, you're saying you sort of don't think, is that really my child? I mean, had you seen her as all that?
Yeah, she started rather early. I mean, I remember in kindergarten, when she was five, we went to a parents' day, and she was leading a bunch of kids on the stage singing and entertaining parents. And she came on stage singing this Swahili song, which we recorded. I think we still have a version of it somewhere, I hope. And she just did wonders. And that's when we realized that this child is in for something. And, of course, when she went to primary school and then high school, her acting career just blossomed.
Forgive me for asking, but sometimes parents are always thrilled that their children desire a career in acting. Do you remember what your thoughts were about it when you realized that that was her course?
Well, one good thing is that I myself, I was an actor when I was in high school, and we are thespians, really, in the family. We loved going to plays. I mean, I used to, when we were in the car going to work, recite to them some lines from Shakespeare, which amazed them, especially from Othello, you know, when Othello was wooing Desdemona before her father and telling these stories of his adventures in Africa, the anthropophagi, men whose heads grew beneath their shoulders. And they were just amazed. And so, I mean, these kind of things amazed them and inspired them and say, well, we can also go on stage. And kind of all of them kind of took to the arts, really. Because I myself was a student of literature and political science and philosophy in college. And I kind of didn't see that it is necessary to steamroll a kid into a particular career or not her or his liking. Yeah.
He's still a Shakespeare fan?
I am, and she still is. And I think.
No, I was asking you.
Me, of course, yes definitely.
What's your favorite play?
My favorite play, believe you or not, is Richard II.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is a play I really have liked ever since high school.
Do you remember any of the monologues?
Oh, yes. I think when, you know, Northumberland kind of turned against the king, King Richard. And this particular duke tells him Northumberland. No, it's actually King Richard himself who tells Northumberland, who was his close confidante, but turned against him to support Bolingbroke against him. Mm. And he had already surrendered the crown and tells Northumberland, time will not be many years from now, ere foul sin, gathering head, shall break into corruption. Mm-hmm. And thou shalt think, though he give you half, it is too little, helping him to all.
Ah.
And I think that is
bravo.
something that is very reminiscent of a lot of politics.
I was going to go there next. Actually, that's where I was headed. If you are just joining us, I'm speaking with Peter Anyang Nyong'o. He is a professor of political science, a senator in Kenya, and you might recall that famous name. He is the father of Lupita Nyong'o, the Academy Award winner. Many people have noted Lupita's interesting background. She was born in Mexico. Do you mind sharing why she was born in Mexico?
Because in the 1970s and 80s, we had a lot of political repression in Kenya. Jomo Kenyatta died in 1978 in August, and we all expected the new president, who was Jomo Kenyatta's vice president, Daniel Arap Moi, to be a kind of more liberal and expand the political space. Unfortunately, he became even more repressive. And we were teaching the University of Nairobi then, and both students and lecturers, we were kind of opposed to this kind of political repression, this kind of presidential authoritarian regime.
You and your wife, both were professors,
sure.
Yes.
No, my wife was not a professor. My wife, actually, let me confess, when I started teaching, my wife was in the third year at undergraduate, and I supported her and then married her 2 years after that. So maybe I was raiding the credit, but that's okay.
And it's okay now.
It's okay now.
Anyway,
but then I was teaching at the University of Nairobi, and we were organizing against the regime, and caused a lot of repression, and I was put in every so often into police custody and so on. And it became really rough. My younger brother disappeared mysteriously at the coast. So I pleaded with the university to let me go. And fortunately, I got an invitation to Mexico at El Colegio de Mexico to go and help them establish an African Studies Center and teach there. So we took off, my family and I. Well, a small family, my wife and the eldest daughter, Zawadi. We went there in December 81, and in March 83, Lupita was born.
Hmm.
And the name Lupita is very important because it's kind of a combination of Luo and the name Peter. The word Lu in Luo means to follow, and Peter is, of course, my name, Peter. Mm-hmm. So we got this name Lupita, which is really a diminutive form for Guadalupe, the patron saint of the Mexicans. And so we called her Lupita.
Well, that's lovely, and she is truly a child of both Mexico and of Kenya. I think she seems to be equally loved by both, and of course, well, as Americans as well. At one point, you went back to Kenya, and the repression continued, if you don't mind my mentioning this. This was not an easy time. This is not a story that is as well known in the States, but you were subject to many of the tactics of a repressive regime, constant harassment, arrest.
Yeah.
So forth.
Yeah, well, Lupita says a little bit of it in the current issue of Vogue in July. I was reading it this morning off the internet. But you see, what happened was that when we were in Mexico was rather far from home. You see, those days there were no emails, there were no WhatsApp. These things were not there. So you had to write a letter or call. Now, calling was very expensive. And unfortunately, when we were in Mexico, my wife lost her grandmother. And that was quite a terrible experience because we can't even go to the funeral. It was too far. We knew 2 weeks after she was buried. So we said, look, we have to move nearer home. We can't stay here for too long. And we loved Mexico. We wanted to stay here for a longer time. But then I arranged and I got a job with the United Nations organization. We moved to New York in December of 83. But my family didn't like New York. So in April of 84, I leave a UN job and go back to teaching. But then we couldn't keep away from the politics. So it started all over again. And I think in the 80s, it was really rough before we got the democratic opening of the 90s. Yeah, but those days were not easy.
How did you cope with that? May I ask, how were you treated while in custody?
Well, fortunately for me, I didn't get physical torture. I mean, the kind of beating that my other colleagues got. I mean, I was a little lucky in that regard. What one got was psychological torture. I mean, being kept in isolation, being interviewed, harassed, all kinds of things. Humiliation, really. I mean, for example, I remember a place called the Nyayo Dungeons. This was the basement of the Nyayo building. We go there, you're kept in a tiny little cell, dark, with the bulb up there in the roof. And you don't go out, and you can't go and wash, cold shower, no soap. There was no way to brush your teeth, no way to comb your hair. So really, it makes you feel bad about yourself. Mm. And then, of course, there's no towel to dry yourself, so you go back to the little cell, and you have to run around the cell several times to get dry. And that is good, because now that I remember, it was good exercise, because if you had sat down, it would have been terrible. But that was kind of conditions that we were kept in.
It's remarkable, because I think people who have seen 12 Years a Slave will remember this pivotal and just horrifying scene of humiliation involving Lupita's character, Patsy, not having soap. It's about her not being able to wash herself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible to consider even now. I wonder, did she know about your experience? Did it inform, you think, her performance, knowing that you had experienced something not the same, but reminiscent?
Reminiscent. But I always tell people that really when I saw 12 Years a Slave, ours was like a dinner party. I mean, 12 Years a Slave was really, really horrific. I mean, when I saw it, then I said, well, we didn't really go through this kind of hell. But nonetheless, we told the kids the stories, not everything. But of course, I remember one day when I came back home from about a month of incarceration, the kids were really shocked, because when I came in, the hair was unkempt. I mean, they could see the disheveled condition. But we had to tell them the stories. I think they grew up, particularly Lupita, because she was very, very close to me, knowing what was happening. They knew that life was not that easy, especially if you stand for something. And I think it also helped us instill in them some principles and not take life for granted. And also to stand up for themselves, because we knew that very often the family was isolated. People couldn't come to visit us, because those days when you are known as a government dissident, a lot of people kept away from you. So that also helped the family come closer together.
Well, also the uncertainty, as you mentioned, your brother disappeared.
Yeah.
And his body was never found.
Yes, yes.
And there was never any definitive account of what happened to him. So it must have been terrifying to have you be taken away.
Yeah.
And not knowing when you would return.
Lupita was still very young. And I think she didn't say much, but I think these things registered in her mind, you see. So I think that amount of uncertainty, of not knowing whether daddy will be there tomorrow or not, I think these things did register in their conscience.
Mm. You know, sometimes when people have gone through all the things that you have gone through, and you are back in public life as a senator, it puts certain pressure on the kids to follow the example set by their parents. And I just wondered, you know, for you, I'm interested in your decision to go back into public life after all that you went through. And also, do you have some expectation for your own children about whether there's something that you feel is expected of them as a consequence of all that you have experienced? Do you understand?
I do understand what you're saying. Well, you see, my going into public life was something that came logically. I mean, we were struggling against this authoritarian regime. So when multi-party politics came, we had to take the responsibility or shepherding the democratic process. It was not just me. We were quite a group. In those days, we were known as Young Turks. I think now.
Now just Turks.
Now just Turks. Now you're just Turks. No longer young. But anyway, but we had to take the responsibility of carrying the struggle along. And of course, one of the things that pleases me is that now at least we have a new constitution, which is a much more progressive constitution than any we have had before. And I hope that as the struggle continues, when it is implemented, life will be very different from the past. Of course, that also depends on politics. But to come back to your question, I don't think that I want my kids to follow my footsteps. No. My wife and I were very clear about that. Our feeling is that the kids should follow what they feel is their calling.
Obviously, as a parent, you must be very proud of your daughter, all of your children, but we're talking about, you know, Lupita now. But what do you think is the meaning of what has happened, you know, with her? Not just the awards for her acting, but all of the acclaim about her beauty and her style and her elegance. Does it have any importance in your view?
Well, it does. I mean, the beauty and the style and the dressing and all that we never really expected. I mean, look, that came to us as a surprise. I guess as a parent, you don't really appreciate this. But I was surprised. I never knew. But when all this happened, then there came this conversation she had been having with her mom about beauty. They never told me. I learned, like everybody else, that it was something that was important in their lives. And of course, the mother kept on affirming to her that she was beautiful. And so I think when this happened, at her level, it was a fantastic affirmation of what the mother instilled in her to believe in herself. And I think, to me, it helped give her strength that there is more to you than you think, and that you should give the best of yourself to the world. And I think that the thing that she's trying to strive as is always to do her best in whatever she does, but do it in the service of humanity.
Well, thank you for coming in to speak with us.
Yeah.
Of course, you're a very important person in your own right, as a professor, as a scholar, and also as a senator. But, you know, I do have to ask, are there any special perks to being the father of an Oscar winner? Do you get, you know, special treatment?
Not a jot.
Not a jot?
If anything, I have lost my identity, because now, thank you for calling me professor and then senator and so on, but everybody else said Baba Lupita.
Baba Lupita, Lupita's dad.
Lupita's dad. So I've been complaining that I'm losing my identity. So an endangered species, as it were.
Well, I'm sure some dinner reservations will be easier to get now, perhaps.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah. Baba Lupita, Peter Anyang Nyong'o, is a Kenyan senator. And as we mentioned, the father of Oscar winner Lupita Nyong'o. He is, as we've mentioned, a member of the Kenyan Senate in his own right and a professor of political science. And he was kind enough to join us in our studios while on a trip to Washington, D.C. to participate in the Smithsonian Folklife Festival, which is presenting Kenya this year and the culture of Kenya as a part of its portfolio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.